This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery, like McKenna, brings a top-tier lineup. With Leif Davis-esque delivery right to your door, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So the only thing left to say is, you win. Order now on the McDonald's app, and you can also get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus. Rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hello and welcome to the Blue Monday podcast covering Ipswich Town since 2015. I'm Richard Woodward and this is the flagship show, Sunderland at Home Edition, available each week on podcast audio and video. Joining me this week for an hour or so of a reverent but always informative Ipswich Town chat as we pack out Blue Monday, just as Portmanteau is packed out on Saturday. In no particular order, Dave Diamond, Craig Fimbo and Seb Brown. Are you all going to be, I need a commitment right now, better behaved, I'm looking at you, Fimbo, in particular, better behaved than the group, the herding of cats I had to do for the Kieran McKenna live show. That was chaotic. Well, do I need to start muting people? Are we all going to be on our best behaviour? Craig,
absolutely. Yes, Mr. Woodward.
There you go. Good man. How are you, Craig? How are you guys? Well, he's looking upset now. You know what you did.
I'm going to use the word chastised.
Well, I have to...
don't know what it means, but I'm going to use it.
It's a new era under a new manager, and I have to set the discipline early doors. Do you know what I mean? Are you doing all right?
Yes, thank you very much. Yeah, all good. Unscathed as things stand, touch wood, from that COVID soup of yesterday. We'll see.
Can I just say, Rich, I think Seb looks like he's chewing.
Oh, is he? Have you got something to share with
fine.
The class?
I'll get a fine for that.
Spit it out, Seb. Spit it out.
Right. In my hand. No, I don't. No one likes the grass, David Diamond, but how are you? Snitches get stitches. Tell us about that. So there is a 0204 away shirt, or is it 0304?
I dug it out the other day. Funny enough, I'm in the loft, getting the Christmas lights and general paraphernalia down. I thought, oh, here's a bag of shirts, goodness me, forgot I had them. And that is I played a couple of times in the back in the day when they had the fans games at Portman Road. So that was the shirt, obviously I was playing for the away team then, that was the shirt I had from I think the first game, which I'll tell you exactly when it was, because you know I've got sort of a bit of a daft memory. It was the Monday after a very disappointing hammering by Wimbledon, I think pretty much in the last game of the season. A bit of a 4-1, was it? Something like that?
Five, I think.
So, that was a long time. As you said, 0204. So that must have been 2003, I reckon. A great fun. I mean, absolutely brilliant. When, like you said before, I had my bionic arm and dodgy knees and stuff like that. So it was, it was good to dig that one out. So I thought, I'll put that one up.
If you've got any other rarities in the bag, just keep it to yourself and DM me.
I know. I've shared that with you guys before. Yeah, I'm still finding them. They're all sort of dotted around up there, but yeah.
And Seb, we caught up on Friday and you're around and we thought, well, you haven't been on flagship for a while, so pack out Blue Monday. How are you?
It's nice, thanks. Yeah, I'm spending a rare weekend up in Chester, so nice to come back on the flagship. But I'm very jealous because it looks very, very sunny where Craig and Dave are, whereas all I've got is like 1 degree in fog. So maybe I've made the wrong choice. Maybe I should be in Suffolk this weekend, eh?
Craig's just got his suntan lights out, I think, isn't it?
I'm in Essex, mate. You know damn well I've got my suntan lamp on.
Yeah, look, he's going orange. He's going orange as we speak.
Christmas Clementine.
And I'm literally 2 miles away, probably, from Rich. So Rich can, and my weather isn't any different here, unfortunately.
grim, foggy here. There's the weather. Let's deal with the news, shall we? And I guess I've now got the news from Craig on Thursday. So it was like ages ago. Seb on Friday. So on the flagship, Dave, tell us your views of Kieran McKenna's appointment.
Wow, yeah. I mean, news of it broke quite late in the day. So I think he was appointed Thursday. Well, his appointment, well, you guys were on air, for goodness sake. So how good is that? Thursday, so yeah. I think first whisper of it came through, I think, Wednesday. Was it maybe? I can't remember. I can't recall it seeing being earlier than that. A gamble for me, but you know, you look at his coaching credentials, for goodness sake, they're pretty much second to none. I think retired early as a player, was a decent, fairly decent player. I think he had Northern Ireland under 21, retired to retire early, young as a player, went straight into coaching, I think, with Spurs. Did he overlap with Klug or not? I'm not sure. There's some talk
he
may
was
have
a youth
done. I'm
player.
Not.
When he was a youth player, he
when
did.
He was playing, okay.
He and was then, under John McDermott and Alex Inglethorpe.
Oh, yeah, okay. Again, you know, good names. Ended up at Man U, ultimately under Mourinho. I mean, so look, the guy's coaching credentials are second to none. As is his number two, who's come across as who's come over as well, who, say it quietly, obviously started with those up the road and also starting his coaching career with them. I was reading a bit about him. He's had an interesting career, hasn't he? He spent time in a state sort of conditioning coach for, I think, New York Yankees for a time.
Yeah, and I like that Miami sort of Heat.
So, look, an interesting appointment. I mean, you know, personally, I thought I didn't know which way it was going to go this time last week when certain managers were being talked, then we all said, hang on, is that really not too dissimilar to the outgoing manager? No names. And perhaps at that time I wanted a more, how can I put it, aggressive type, perhaps have a go for the last sort of half season and then see. But this is the, you know, if not that, this is the best thing. It's a huge gamble. Yeah, it's a departure, but quite an exciting departure. I think if we were going to go down this route, his name came to the frame so late in the day. I think people were thinking, looking at the Chelsea guy, Barry from Chelsea, it would have been a very similar type appointment. But hopefully exciting times ahead under a young and innovative coach from what I've read. And I think what you guys mentioned on Thursday, the feedback you get from the players' work under him, that his coaching sessions are interesting and, you know, lively and obviously not surprisingly innovative. So better coach players. So hopefully it can be transported onto the pitch. But a big job.
It is a big job, yeah.
A big job.
The one thing that's interesting to me, Seb, and I come to you on this specifically because I think Martin Pert started, at least, I don't know whether he concluded, an accounting degree at Loughborough University. You may or may not have walked past him in the drinking purple nasty at your student union, maybe.
I tried to avoid the sports science kind of area.
Ah, the losers.
I walked past my way to the bar.
It's interesting that
far too fit.
Football has always been kind of closed off to non-football people. You know, even Kieran McKenna is a footballer who's gone straight into coaching, whereas Martin Pert's background is academic and then it is fitness related. He's not got a playing career. I know he was at Norwich City's academy, wasn't he, before I get too far ahead of myself.
He was.
But it is interesting that more and more coaches now aren't necessarily lifers in the game.
It just shows how it's changed, doesn't it, in the last few years. You know, you need multiple strings to your bow. Some of the best managers weren't necessarily great players. And I guess we're now moving to an era where sports science, data, statistics, analysis is all going to come to the front. And there will be markets for guys that have never worked in football before.
And you slagged off the University of Chester a few weeks ago. Presumably you wouldn't slag off the University of Loughborough.
Absolutely not, no. Top 10 university.
There you go. Good stuff. I don't know how to get from there to where I'm going to next, so I'm just going to do a very clunky. So the Kevin Beattie statue was unveiled yesterday. After a long wait, I think it was supposed to be unveiled at some point earlier in the year. Our greatest ever player, accepted as our greatest ever player, 222 apps, 24 goals, 9 caps for England, but a career cruelly cut short by injury, as we know. A man who made Ipswich his home and made Ipswich Town his club. A statue was unveiled on Saturday morning by his daughter Emma, with a great deal of ITFC alumni, past and present, in attendance, including Alan Hunter, Mick Mills, Russell Osman, John Walk, Jason Dizell, Luke Chambers, Tommy Smith for more recent times, David Sheepshanks, Mike O'Leary, Mark Ashton, and Burke Bakai, Mark Detmer from the new owners. Craig, your thoughts on the statues outside Portman Road? I mean, is it good to mark our history, or are you one of these people that kind of thinks we need to think more about the present?
Oh, I don't think there's anything wrong with it. You missed David Diamond from the ITFC.
Oh, I was going to come to him. Don't worry. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, no, I don't think there's any problem with it at all. As you say, you know, the issue you may well have had is if you start putting up statues for everyone, you can suddenly starts looking like ancient Rome. These statues lining the entire streets of Portman Road. But I think it's a very suitable.
I don't know,
suitable.
Mate.
No, I don't know.
Fitting tribute.
A fitting tribute. Thank you, David. A fitting tribute. Perfect. And nicely positioned as well. It's a decent little spot there as well on the corner for the council have donated, et cetera, et cetera. So, it's a good little corner. We've got Sir Bob's image on the corner of the stand and Sir Ralph and Kevin Beattie in the other corner.
And you've now got the option of meeting at Sir Ralph or at the beat. Haven't you? Which is
I think it'd be more appropriate to meet at the beat, wouldn't it? Meet at the beat for a quick beer.
I was going to say, if you're going into town for a beer, Dave. Yeah. As Craig mentioned, you were there yesterday or Saturday. Your thoughts on the whole tribute and the event as well?
Yeah, it was good. I mean, look, he's acknowledged as our greatest ever player. I think personally, yes, it should probably stop there now. And it was great. As you say, a lot of the old ex-players were there. It was about, I don't know, 200 or 300 people down there. It was just quite nice atmosphere. His daughter did the unveiling, which was nice. And, as you said, the ex-players came, all stood up and said a word about him. So, yeah, it was, just a nice thing. As you said, it's been delayed because of one thing and another, probably mostly the pandemic. But it was good to see it finally. Good to see it finally there and you said a good tribute to our, undoubtedly, our greatest ever player to date.
And I asked the question to Craig about history and marking history, because we get a lot of the very few things that Norwich City fans can point at us. We do wallow in our history, but that's because we have a history. And I'm kind of thinking of clubs of a similar stature. There won't be too many who've got two England managers outside the ground and an England international, one of the greatest players of that era outside their stadiums. Particularly, I'm trying to think, if I was building a statue outside Norwich, it would be Paul Lambert or Jeremy Goss. Do you know what I mean? I just wanted to, because a lot of people, a lot of the younger people watching, listening to this, would not have been around during those eras. Certainly, I don't think I was. I was probably born just after them. So it kind of reflects that this is a club which does have stature that in recent times has probably fallen below that, isn't it?
And it's good to remind you. Appreciate,
this is where you should be.
Growing up, very, very privileged. Obviously, I'd want my younger years back. But growing up in that era was just. But it's the thing. I've spoken to so many friends since then, and schoolmates and stuff. We used to follow town up and down the country at times, and you just took it for granted. You did those that era, mid 70s to early 80s. You just did, and it's tough to explain to people now because of the lack of social media, then the lack of TV exposure. For goodness sake, when I say younger fans, sometimes you speak to them and say, "Gosh, if football, not say in social media coverage, but if football had the TV coverage back then, we'd never be playing on a Saturday afternoon. We'd just be on. We'd be on Sundays. We'd be playing our games would be shown every single week. That's where you sort of think back and think, wow, we had it. Yeah, it was just superb, great times. And look, so Robson came in, as essentially a coach. Yeah, he was a coach. He was an out-and-out coach. That was his love. And, look what happened from there. So hopefully there's a symmetry to it, hopefully.
Craig, if you were to build a statue outside Portman Road of your favourite player, who would it be?
Don't know, really. It's difficult choice.
What pose is he doing? He'd be not celebrating a goal, wouldn't he?
It'd be a similar. Well, the problem you'd have is you'd need to have like a an 80, 90-yard long statue of Neil Thompson whacking the ball and, like, the flight of the ball, and then Steve Whitten headering it from the right wing, wouldn't you, back into the middle to Zell and Kiwami. That'd be, have to be a hell of a, you know, plinth to fit all that on.
Would it be the pose of him whipping that crossing against Liverpool?
Very possibly. Or he's, you know, like they've got outside St. James's Park of Shearer with his arm in the air, it'd be the Steve Whitten just trudge back and a cheeky handshake on the way back, having scored a goal.
Yeah. Sort of those slumped shoulders, yeah.
Oh, don't
and, and his lumpy thigh. Yeah, that'd be it. As long as the sculptor got that lump in his thigh, then, yeah, exactly.
Get that right. And Seb, yours would be David Johnson pointing him to the back of his shirt, wouldn't it?
Oh, yeah, or doing the splits or leaping doing in the air splits. Like he did against Man City when he scored that header. Yeah, but you'd have to do a Marcus Stewart statue as well then, so we could continue the debate about which statue is better.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the Marcus Stewart one would be Marcus Stewart pose. What would that? I think it would be.
It's gonna be taking it around a goalkeeper. Surely.
Taking it around a goal. It would be. Yeah, you'd need Paul Gerrard on the floor.
Yeah.
And Mark or Sander Vesterveld on the floor, and Stewart and Carragher going like that. That would be
Paul Gerrard, Sander Vesterveld, Jasko Leinen, any of them really. Yeah. Keep going.
Oh, the Jasko Leinen. That's the one. Yeah. There you go. Let in the comments. Let us know your Ipswich Town statue of choice from your time watching the club. And what they would be doing. And there you go. I've gone very Partridge there. I'm going to move us on to some actual football, guys. And in front of a bumper crowd, 29,005, albeit maybe some pockets of seats for obvious reasons. A lot of change, guys. We obviously saw second half a change in formation. We've got plenty of questions on that, so we won't drill too much into that. But quite a lot of changes of personnel. Some not surprising, some surprising. Let me talk you through them, and then we'll get some opinions. Wolfenden came in for I guess notionally for Burgess. Edmondson shifted to the left of that back three, as it was, with Danasin over on the right. Penny in at left wing back. A big surprise. We thought he was injured, but Jesus returned just in front of his before his birthday. Wes Burns took up position on the right wing. His first appearance since the Oldham Cup replay. Aluko moved into an attacking midfield position centrally, which I really liked. That meant Chaplin dropped out, Edwards dropped out, and Norwood, probably our form striker at the moment, on the back of a goal against Wigan and a combative, albeit quiet, performance against Barrow, most people were, comes in for Joe Piggott. Craig, your thoughts on that selection?
Well, I think when it first came out, no one was sure of the formation, were they? It could have been a very, very flat 4-4-2 with the same personnel, couldn't it? And that's sort of what we all assumed it would be to start with. But then I think Stuart Watson, East Anglian, said that it's actually going to be a 3-5-2. And when you looked at it then, you thought, well, yeah, it does fit the personnel. You know, we're not the only ones to have said it. It seems to have fit the personnel, and it allows us both to get two up front and to keep three in midfield. It's sort of it's the best of both worlds. And as you say, Rich, you know, moving Aluko to, you know, the latest in the number of line of a number of tens. You know, we'll have another one. You've got almost more number tens we've had left backs this year so far. And I suppose, you know, Wolfenden having played the second half at Barrow in that back three, Edmondson being better on the left as well. Playing better on the left. I'm not saying he's not going to no good on the right, but yeah, and using Danasian as a centre half as well rather than right just shows his versatility as well, didn't it? So indeed, it just looked a nice balanced team, didn't it?
It did. I think a lot of us have been saying for a while that a three at the back would provide that balance, and so it proved to be. And here's the phone call early doors. Is that there? It is
me. Whoever rings on my landline.
Who rings on a landline?
Landline?
In 2021. That was a landline. I think I've had a landline in.
It's still there, and it's still there.
Never mind.
Like in-laws and stuff like that.
For those emergency 2 a.m. phone calls that you dread. Yeah, I may or may not cut that one out. I don't know. I'll ever think about that. Dave, your thoughts on Norwood as well?
Sorry, what was the question? My thoughts on Norwood. Yes. Good to see him back in the starting lineup. But you know, did well against Wigan, as you said, was at least competitive for a time against Barrow. So yeah, wasn't totally surprised to see him in there. Was I a bit surprised that he started up front with Bond? Maybe yes. I thought Bond might have been due for a due for a rest. It's a strange one. I don't know if there's any questions going to come up against Bond. Correct me if there is. Okay, fine. So I'll leave that. But yeah, good to see him in there. As I said before, I just like to see him around the squad if he's not starting. If he is clearly now back in favour, he'd certainly be should be in and around the squad, and if not certainly on the bench, if not starting as an impact player for sure.
Yep. Seb, we spoke about Sunderland on Friday, obviously. They're going into this game third in the league off the back of four wins and two draws since they turned their season around by beating us against the run of play, beat Plymouth last time out. And Seb, an unchanged team, I think it was, and in players in positions that you called on the pre-match.
Exactly how we expected it. Yeah, they've settled with this three at the back since they beat us. It's like a 3-4-3, or it kind of becomes a 3-4-1-2. Pritchard sort of drops in the hole behind Stewart and Broadhead, doesn't he? So exactly as we were expecting, that's the formation change, which has sort of turned their season around a little bit. So there were no surprises with their lineup at all, were there?
No, and I found on whoscored.com you can find average positions, and it was interesting yesterday that it was the same formation that they played against Plymouth, but a lot narrower. And I don't know whether that was a result of the way that we were playing or a conscious decision perhaps on their part to push us out wide. I don't know. But that was the only kind of obvious thing different that I saw there. Nathan Broadhead on loan from Everton, Ross Stewart, top scorer up front, some good threat there for them. But and Ipswich, a Portman Road buoyed by the flags, the presence of some of the game changer guys, the presence of Kieran McKenna, and it was a first half performance certainly of real intent and energy, wasn't it, guys? I mean, there's a few chances here in the first half, none of them really clear cut. Aluko, Burns, Norwood kind of combine a nice little flick back by Norwood into Burns, who's quite close in, hits the side netting. Big chance on 10 minutes here. Thoughts on this from someone? Burns down the right, nice little flick in by Norwood, kind of Aluko and Burns going for the same ball. Burns is quickest. This cross comes over Craig, and should Penny do better?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. Let's see. And that would have crowned off that first 10 minutes, wasn't it? Because we really went at them for that first 10 minutes. The tempo, the pace, the directness, if that's a word, it deserved a goal. And, you know, how often have we said that flip it round? How often have we been under pressure for a small amount of time and we concede? Yeah, it always seems to end up in a goal, whereas conversely, it doesn't seem to do it for us. We could be pounding at a door for 45 plus 1 minute, and you know, may score at the end of it. But yeah, Burns started off fantastically, didn't he? That first 10 minutes, 50 minutes in front of Dave and I, he was just every time they were getting the ball, and even Edmondson was trying to ping it over to the right wing to get him on the ball. They were just feeding him, and he had Gooch on toast in that first half. He was just knocking it past him at will. And to be fair to him, you know, what you do sometimes, a criticism of Burns is that he'll get a bit, he'll lose his head a bit when he gets to cross the ball, but he seemed to be picking out men with the ball, you know, whether it be a floated up ball to the far post or a cut back along the floor, whatever it happened to be. He just seemed to be on it from the very start. And then, say, in this instance, he hung up to the far post, and Burns, his fellow wing back from the other side,
Penny,
exactly what you want. Is they're attacking when they're attacking the far post when you're crossing it from the other side. And he's just got to hit the target, isn't he? Just completely fluffs his lines. And yeah, I think that would have got everyone absolutely buzzing. And that first 10 minutes I thought was fantastic.
Yeah, it was good. Worth mentioning as well, Craig, about Burns is he'll go on to play the entire match. And it was what I found bizarre was, and I think we might have exchanged messages to this effect, is this guy hasn't played since the middle of November, has come back in out of nowhere, not aware he's played any reserve or under 23 football. And looked the same old player that we knew from the start of the season. It was quite a reappearance, wasn't it, from Burns yesterday? Did that surprise you?
Resurrection, mate. Just to take on your theme one step a few months further.
Were you surprised that he wasn't one of the subs in the second half?
Yeah, I suppose. Yeah, but he played there for Fleetwood, didn't he? That was his position for Fleet, wasn't it? I think right wing back. So it's not alien to him. But now, as you say, monumental. In terms of fitness, but McGreal said afterwards, didn't he, that he was gagging to play last week. So I don't think it was as if he was a million miles off last week. So, you know, another week or so getting fit, match fit, etc. Yeah, he was yeah, fantastic yesterday. And it goes to show what we've missed, and you know, potentially goes to show what Paul Cook missed, doesn't it?
True. Yeah. Well, more on that later. I'm kind of changing the order a little bit here. So, Dave, I'm going to come to you for the goal in a minute. So be prepared for that. Seb, though, I want to ask you about this. Kind of, I don't know whether it's just a consequence of the lineup or a consequence of the instructions or a consequence of the adrenaline that's flowing because of the atmosphere. I'd argue this is probably our most combative performance of the season so far. Certainly a game for Morsy, who was doing really well against his opposite number. Was it?
Richard
and Neil.
Richard, the one he kept clattering into.
Evans was busy. He clashes with Diaku. I think it's Diaku on 37 who stays down and is taken off. But you've got Bon and Norwood as well, Seb. Do you think that was a coincidence or was that maybe planned by McGreal?
Well, I guess you know with Bon and Norwood up front, the centre-backs playing against them are never going to get a minute's peace, are they? They're constantly going to be there. The ball's going to stick with them. They're going to be putting themselves about. And the whole team just seems so up for it. It's such a contrast to what we saw at Charlton, where there was no fight, no passion. We saw all that yesterday, certainly for the first 45 minutes without question. And it was great to see, wasn't it? You know, we had Evans and Morsy breaking things up. Pritchard, like Craig just said, didn't get a kick. And I think, did you put in the WhatsApp group, he kept whinging every time he was tackled by Morsy to the ref, and the Sunderland bench were in the fourth official's ear and stuff. And it's what you want to see. You know, you want to make Portman Road a horrible place for other teams to come. We're so nice and we're so easy normally to play against, and you want to make that a bit of a cauldron. So, you know, the atmosphere factor was built into it. The players seemed really, really up for it. I guess you've got, you know, the new manager in the stand watching on. You've got the atmosphere kicking in, and it was just great to see. And hopefully we'll get to see more of it now with the new guy.
Some stats for you. Against Sunderland, Jules won 61 for Ipswich, 47 for Sunderland. Against Charlton, 48 duels won. Charlton won 56. Aerials about the same. Tackles, though, twice as many tackles yesterday as Charlton, which I guess wouldn't be a surprise. Only 11 tackles made against Charlton, 22 tackles made yesterday. That kind of illustrates the point, doesn't it?
Honestly, Morsy yesterday was a nasty little sod. He was everywhere, and he was kicking Pritchard fairly and unfairly, and Pritchard was bitching and moaning. He wasn't moaning to the referee, he was turning to Lee Johnson and moaning at him as if Lee Johnson can do anything about it. And even when Sunderland were breaking the ball, yeah, exactly that. Yeah, Dad, he keeps kicking me. But even when Sunderland were breaking with the ball, he was throwing people to the floor out of the eye shot of the referee. The referee's looking that way, whereas meanwhile, Morsy's, you know, actually literally throwing someone to the floor in the centre circle and getting in their ear and stuff. It was just a proper, horrible, nasty midfield performance. Exactly what you need from him. And he didn't get booked, did he? So
I don't think he did.
He trod a very thin line.
I mean, yeah. It's a good point. What Pritchard was doing was moaning at Johnson, and they were in the fourth official's ear, probably the most I've ever seen a opposing side this season. And it goes on. We know it goes in on week in, week out, but they were constantly in his ear. And the
every decision. And what was notable, actually, Dave, don't you talk about it, but every time Johnson or his guard dog got up and started moaning at the fourth official, John McGreal stood up and walked over. So he was basically sandwiching him every single time. John McGreal would get up and just walk over there, as if to say, sit back down.
Experienced man for you. Yeah.
And then, Dave, the culmination of all of this hard work, these chances, these openings, happens on half time.
Yeah, it did. I mean, there was a big delay. There was a big delay. You mentioned it, the tackle by Evans on Jaku. I mentioned in the group yesterday, there's a guy who sits very near me and has done for years, and that if there is a room 101, that is his room 101. Opposing players going down, which they did again several times yesterday to get a break and everything else. And it's all kind of funny. You see everyone else who sits around, and when he eventually goes off on a stretcher, so eyes are sort of burning on the guy sort of thing, you know. But that, as you said, that sort of set the tone. But the goal was... It came from our throw. So Burns takes quite a quick throw. He's quite alert into I think the throw goes into a Luke. I think the throw goes into Morsy. Morsy touches it back, and it's a nice play. Again, a first time ball, I think, from Burns to Aluko. Morsy, and this is how Morsy. I think you said it, Craig. Morsy wasn't static yesterday, so Morsy continues his run, receives a ball, and it's a lovely sort of disguised pass. I mean, he's got that, hasn't he? Lovely disguised pass for once. I mean, if I am going to be critical of Bon, he holds his run quite well. a deflected cross, and then it's all about Norwood, isn't it? He's just aggressive and bloody wants that ball, doesn't he? It's a hard finish. It's quite a hard finish because he has to, you know, time it. Get easy, but you know, I know he's only 6-7 yards out, but he's aggressive. He wants that ball. He's going to win the ball. Good header, barring in, and no more than we deserved, really. Interesting celebrations. So after they celebrate, I don't know if Craig saw this, after they celebrate, he peels off on his own and goes straight to Kieran Dyer and gives him a big fist pump, so and sort of big hug there. So there's obviously some encouragement there for, he's got a fan there, I think.
Yeah, presumably he's been coaching him for the under-23s when he's been out in the cold, hasn't he, from
Cubs. Yeah, so there's a bond there, I think. So no more than we deserve. But I mean, what I was going to say, as a result of the Jacko injury, that was, I think it was 7 minutes, wasn't it? 7 minutes of time added on first half. So and great time to score.
And it's worth saying as well, there were a couple of times where Sunderland went down and tried to regroup with Johnson on the touchline, didn't they? And it didn't affect us. Maybe against other teams previously, you know, if Rotherham had done that, if we started well against Rotherham and then they'd broke the game up and reset, we probably would have fallen. But yesterday, at least in the first half,
we just carried on, didn't we? I mean, the keeper did it very early, didn't it? Was it about 10 minutes in, the keeper did it. And straight away, everyone's over to the touchline and Johnson's giving instructions and you're starting to think, right, okay, we're going to see a tactical change here to try and certainly nullify Burns because he was tearing them to pieces. But every time they tried it, and certainly like you said in the first half, we just rided it out and kept going, didn't we? It was great to see.
And I think generally it was the whole energy and intensity of the first half. You know, we didn't let them play out from the back at all. Obviously with two up front helped, but you know, Bon and Norwood were really closing down the fullbacks, and they were I'd say sixes and sevens. We didn't create too much, but yeah, we were very, very much in the ascendancy.
We were dominating. I mean, Edmondson had a few occasions where he was suddenly appearing on the edge of their area, wasn't he? You know, the press was absolutely superb.
Yeah, it was. It really was.
Quite you say about tech. Go on, Rich.
I'm going to talk about the start of the second half. So if you've got something first half, then...
Well, I was just going to say quickly just about tactical changes that they swapped Gooch around, didn't they? They swapped him away from Burns. Yeah, they did.
Craig, you mentioned, I don't know if you deliberately did it or inadvertently did it, that we all concede after a very short period of dominance for the opposition. Second half starts. To me, Sunderland noticeably moved up the pitch. They were very deep first half, maybe 10, 20 yards further up the pitch, and started getting in behind us a little bit and realised there was a ball on there. And actually, the goal comes very shortly after the restart. And your thoughts on whether this is, I'm fearing a David Diamond kind of answer to this one, but whether it's a nice move by Sunderland or whether we're just a little bit flat-footed. Certainly Evans doesn't do well with Neil for the ball that goes in.
Evans started off in the first five or so minutes of the second half. He started off, he misplaced a couple of passes, didn't he? He seemed to be like regressing back to safe Evans, if you like. I think it was, we'd sort of broken down we had a long ball which they sort of mopped up down the left back area or left wing back area and fed it through to their midfield, and they knock it past Morsey, then as you say, knock it past Evans. So both our central midfielders, you know, could have probably taken off the team and pulled someone back or got a thigh in the way and stopped someone from coming past them. But yeah, they knock it past both our central midfielders, and all of a sudden There's a space between Edmondson and Penny, not for the first time, but it happens pretty soon afterwards, doesn't it, as well, which has slipped through. And, as you say, Broadhead slides it down the side of Walton pretty comfortably, really. Exactly what you don't want. You know, we all know what the halftime talk would have been. You know, keep it quiet, you know, keep it nice and solid for the first 5-10 minutes, you know, because they're going to come at us in the second half. And lo and behold, unfortunately, we conceded one of our two chances. And you look at the XG, I sent the XG chart through last night, and that was it. That's all they did. Their XG was pretty much flat line until they scored, and almost flat line after they scored.
It's a nice enough finish, though, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, he didn't look in any. He never looked like he was going to miss, did he? He was through and just slid it down the side without any fuss whatsoever.
I thought he gave him the eyes a bit, didn't he? And it's a good finish. But it's a half-assed challenge from Evans in there.
Yeah.
Really half-assed challenge. As Craig said, he just step across him, man. He hadn't been booked. Well, I suppose he could have worse pick up a yellow. Just step across him. But so easy.
It's one of those ones you just stick a thigh and you stick a thigh. Oh, sorry. Oh,
yeah. Just take one. Yeah. Take one. Literally take one for the team.
And perhaps, I mean, Edmondson is the left centre back, but is very central for that through ball. Makes you wonder whether that back three is obviously quite a new concept.
Yes, yeah, needs some.
Whether Wolfen knew where to be, whether, you know, Edmondson, Asian, all that kind of
and
stuff.
I think Penny was marking a man as well. So I don't think it was Penny to be coming someone in narrow. Wide. I think he had someone wide to mark. Yeah.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Whether you need a VPN to protect your world online, to allow you to change your worldwide location virtually, or maybe a bit of both, NordVPN gives you the freedom to do so. NordVPN also allows you to stream TV shows, films, and even sporting events which aren't available in your local region, changing to a country which is showing that content, meaning you can switch as seamlessly as a Kira McKenna in-game tactical tweak with just one click. But that's not all. NordVPN can also look after you while online, preventing your card details and passwords from falling into the wrong hands, safeguarding your personal and sensitive information from harm. Think of it as a cyber Sam Morsey, offering protection to your own personal back four, but with far fewer yellow cards. NordVPN is available for the price of a cup of Bovril per month, and one account can be used across 6 different devices. Visit nordvpn.com/Blue Monday or click the link in the podcast description for more information about the offer and a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee trial period. You'll also be helping out the pod by subscribing.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like home comforts. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
I've got your XG chart here that you shared with us.
Yeah. You know,
there's the goal, and then, yeah, it's an L shape, isn't it, basically? And for once, an Ipswich Town performance, which the XG suggests that we were unfortunate to draw, spoiler alert. But 1-1, nevertheless, it is. I mean, there's a similar situation 5 minutes later. This time, Walton comes to the rescue with a decent save when Stewart tries to dink it. And then we get a kind of a raft of substitutions. And it was just a bit of a slow burn the second half. And we didn't really get back into the match. So Sunderland didn't really push home their advantage or their momentum. If I put the attacking momentum graph up there, there's a kind of flurry here up to about 60 minutes. And then it really kind of slackens off until I don't recall this huge burst here that happens towards the end of the game too much. But Seb, there's a couple of changes that are coming up. Vincent Young comes on for Penny, and a few minutes later, Chaplin comes on for Norwood. Your reflection on performances by both of those guys?
I thought Norwood did well, I guess, with his, you know, obviously with his injury history and his lack of match fitness, it was a sensible call to take him off. I did think maybe we'd see Piggott on for Bon at some point, but obviously that didn't happen. KVY for Penny, I didn't know. They got in 2 or 3 times in the same area of the pitch, didn't they, with Edmondson sort of being dragged central. So I don't know if it was a tactical tweak by McGreal. KVY is a bit quicker, isn't he, than Penny, so maybe he thought, if they're getting in down that side, if I put Vincent Young onto the left fullback position, he's got a bit of extra pace to try and get them out of trouble a little bit, maybe.
And Vincent Young has played left side for Cole U. We thought that might have been the case at Charlton. It certainly was the case at Colchester, by the way. But your thoughts on him being that side?
I thought he did all right. He got himself forward a few times, got into the box, didn't he? Got to the byline a few times. Like you say, McGreal had him there at Cole U, and I guess it'll be interesting to see where McKenna sees him, because there's no doubt that left back, or, you know, the whole left side of the pitch is really the area which is going to be interesting in January in terms of new additions, because it's just not worked in the first half of the season. So is he an option there? He's done it before at Colchester, and I guess we'll have to wait and see.
It's just that when he does make those runs and gets to the byline, invariably he has to check back on his right foot.
It's a good point, Dave, because 73 minutes, Morsey has a shot that's blocked out to Vincent Young, who kind of tricks his way into just the left-hand side of the area and cuts in and curls. It's kind of a cross-come shot, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's wide of the far post.
I don't know. Just a quick one about the subs, Rich. I was saying, obviously, we brought Chaplin on, but... You know. Would you have brought Piggott on for Norwood? I know we probably want to keep the energy up, but crikey, if Piggott's not even getting on as a sub in a front two and Chaplin's coming on, I know Chaplin had a shot or two, but I didn't think he was that great when he came on. I don't think he did too much.
See, I kind of put Chaplin in the same, in my Venn diagram of summer signings, similar situation to Fraser, in that both have made telling contributions to matches which, aren't consistent. They're not 7 or 8 out of 10 every week, are they? I know Fraser is probably, in some people's eyes, is less than that most weeks. I just wonder what Chaplin's best position is in this 3-5-2, because he's not going to play up front. Aluko seems to have made that position and the kind of number 10 or the attacking midfield spot his own after that performance yesterday. Fraser could play there. We've got a question about that too. Where do you play Chaplin if he's not going to be a wing back? Because you can play Burns there now, we know that now. Admittedly, probably need a better option, as Seb was saying, at the left. But where do you put Chaplin if this is the system now?
The only place is the Aluko role, surely, isn't it? The slightly advanced of the three central midfielders. But you say, then you've got Salina, you've got Fraser, you've got Aluko did brilliantly there yesterday. So that's the only place all these players can fit in that kind of formation, isn't it?
Or like you did yesterday, you play him as a sort of second striker, just dropped off a little bit off of this proper centre forward, if you like. So you've got a pseudo attacking midfield, a shadow striker, what you want to call it, your FM terminology.
Yeah.
I didn't think it really worked yesterday. I would like to have seen Piggott come on and play again with a proper two up the top and see what happened.
Dave, there's a run of Sunderland corners. We talked about in the pre-match show, they score they score from corners. Are you starting to get heart and mouth at this moment that we might throw?
Yeah, you always do, but I think we defended them really well, didn't we? I can't really recall them getting ahead on any of them. Walton may have come for one or two. I think we just defended them well. For once, I did notice yesterday we were leaving Aluko up, or certainly once or twice we did, and we weren't bringing all 10 men back, which is again a bit of a bugbear of mine. So that was quite good. But yeah, I thought we dealt with them comfortably. I mean, after they scored, obviously the Stewart chance. Really create anything, did they really?
No,
we looked more likely. Story, we just needed a break, I guess. But yeah, well, again, we had a flurry of corners, but again, we didn't. Similar situation, they sort of dealt with them well, didn't they?
And as you mentioned, a few speculative efforts for Chaplin and Aluko, I think, towards the end.
Yeah, Chaplin was a little bit. Yeah, there was one. Someone had an effort. Craig would have a good view of that, and it looked like it was going in. And Luca, maybe Luca had an effort, and just the head came out of nowhere.
Then that was Luca
who had the shot. I can't remember, but we didn't really. You didn't say we missed clear cut chances. There weren't that many chances created, really, was there?
Yeah, and this is where I was going to go, Dave. So ends 1-1, an improved performance certainly, and we'll talk about John McGreal and his performance over these few matches that he's had as interim manager. But kind of, for me, this sums up the situation we are in and the work that McKenna's got to do is, despite that dominance, despite putting in a very combative performance, is that a word? There are not clear-cut chances being made. There are no... The keeper. No. I've got the stats for you here, if you just very quickly. So total shots, 16. Shots on target,
really?
2.
Okay.
Big chances, 2. Including the goal, obviously. But in terms of those clear-cut chances, the saves for the keeper, it was the same old, wasn't it, yesterday?
It's a strange one because you look at Bon, and Bon hasn't scored for eight games now, but would you say he's missed chances? No.
Crew, maybe,
Well, yeah, okay, maybe Crew, maybe. Was it the header he had? Was that against Fleetwood? I don't know, he had a header sort of fairly point-blank. But other than that, I haven't seen him have a chance.
No.
I really haven't. And I don't think it's down to his lack of movement or anything like that. It's just been no creativity there for him.
Okay, that kind of shows how much we've missed Burns, doesn't it? I think.
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely.
Yeah, go on. Tell us about that then, Seb, because he did make the difference, didn't he, Burns?
Yeah. Well, we saw yesterday, in that first half, the pace he's got, he can move the ball so quickly up the pitch for us turn, on counter-attacks. He's absolutely superb. And he had that little run with Bon going at the start of the season, didn't he, where, the low ball would come in and Bon would peel away to the back post. So a bit of an understanding there. And we've missed him awfully in the last few weeks, haven't we?
Yeah,
but what it allows us, Suric, is if you've got Burns on the pitch and you've got two up front, you just play by definition. You play further up the pitch, don't you? You're getting further up the pitch, and as you say, Rich, if we can get someone of a similar ilk on the left hand side, And we don't know what formation McKenna's going to play, but it's going to allow you both sides to get further up the pitch.
That's where I think Coulson's been a massive miss as well, hasn't he? He looked like he had that. He really did. He looked like when Penny came in at the start of the season, I didn't think he started the season too badly. But then when you saw Coulson, especially going forward, you think, oh yeah, here's a definite upgrade here. And again, we haven't had him either. And again, that's gone quiet. Who knows? He might suddenly turn up and start against Gillingham.
Yeah.
Lazarus-like performance. But but as you say, Seb's quite right. Burns is just critical to us, really.
And it's, Craig, 2 points against teams in the top six for a side without a manager, clearly a little bit dysfunctional. John McGrill, your reflection on his spell in charge, obviously not a great game at Charlton or Barrow, but these points against Wigan and Sunderland, you know, he's done his absolute best here and maybe has inadvertently given McKenna on a plate a formation and a system that could be really good for us.
Yeah, very possibly, actually. Yeah, looking at it from that perspective, what was quite interesting, actually, is pretty much as soon as McGrill come in, he says something on the lines of, we're trying to get the guys to take the shackles off. You know, we're going to get them to play with a bit more freedom. You think, well, Christ almighty, why have they not been playing with freedom under one of these, you know, this all-attacking Paul Cook formation? I know we've been, you know, we were seeing it with our own eyes. They weren't playing particularly with a lot of freedom, but just seemed an interesting thing to come out and say. But no, you know, in terms of the games that we've played, you've played, Wigan at second and Sunderland a third, and the momentum we had towards the end of the Wigan game, certainly in the last half hour or so, we could have arguably won that one. And yesterday, we should have arguably won that one. So, you know, in terms of the teams that are in the top six or seven you've got there at the moment, it's only really Rotherham, you could say, well, can't argue Rotherham completely outplayed us. But Wigan, no. Sunderland, no. Wickham,
no.
Plymouth, no.
Seb was at the first Sunderland game. You saw that as well. And frankly, they've nicked 5 points off us, really, haven't they?
Yeah,
we were probably more dominant. We created better chances in the first game, didn't we?
Yeah,
I mean, it's strange, isn't it?
We've now played Leeds.
No real disrespect to Sunderland, but my God, they nicked that one, and yeah, we probably should have edged it yesterday. So there's 5 points straight away.
Our games against Sunderland, it's the sixth time, isn't it, we've played them in League One, and I think every single time it's the same. They are nothing special. Somehow they either score and we fold, or they score against the run of play, etc., and get a point. And you know, I've not been impressed with them any single time I've seen them in League One.
That game yesterday virtually mirrored that game at the start of the season a couple of seasons ago.
We absolutely battered them,
didn't we, first half? Yeah. And then, remember, I think Chambers got mugged in the corner, didn't he, trying to let it go out for a corner. Was it Gooch or Honeyman scored? Gooch may have scored that day, I can't remember. Mm. And they absolutely mugged for a win that day as well. So, yeah, we'd do something against them. I'm not saying we were unlucky yesterday, because we weren't. But yeah, on our first half dominance again, and probably overall, yeah, we probably deserve to win.
You just need more than a goal. We know we're not going to keep a clean sheet. After that first half, we just needed to be 2-0 up. And I said during the week, I've got some mates who are Sunderland fans, and they were there yesterday. And I got a text from them at half time saying that we can't play as badly second half. Well, no, they probably didn't. But we just needed to be 2-0 up at least after the first half. And you just know what the Sunderland fans are like. And I've got a direct view. I look at them from my seat, and they were moaning and all the misplaced passes in the first
quiet,
half.
Weren't they? Really quiet.
Yeah, they were quiet. They were quiet. And they were, you could see them shouting and moaning at the players. As soon as they score a goal, we'll sing your hearts out for the nation. You, God, two-faced. Yeah. And the same as a stadium alight, isn't it? You play at the Stadium of Light, and Seb, you were there, they were quiet as a mouse. They were calling them all the names under the sun. 2-0.
That was a result, probably. I mean, again, how many times have we said that? You know, you play Ipswich, you get a result, and off you go on a run. But if that result would have gone wrong for Johnson, which it should have done, Seb, that day,
he'd have been gone, wouldn't he, on the Monday morning? He'd have been sat, surely. They were up, they were booing and stuff. They weren't happy at all. And then when they scored the goal, Christ, they celebrated like they won the Champions League. But they were running down to the front and stuff, and
Johnson.
Whereas we're nothing like that.
No, we are always the same, even keel. We don't get too up.
Very level. Corinthian exactly right. Fans we are, mate, yeah.
Right. And we turn up in big numbers every single week. Doesn't need a pack-up Paul Monroe promotion. Anyway, no, stop with the sarcasm. Let's do some plug very quickly. BlueMondayITFC.co.uk is where you can find all of the information, all of our feeds for our podcast, for YouTube, all of our Instagram, Facebook, Twitters. If you want to support the channel via donations, we've had a lot of those over the last few weeks. Thank you to everyone who's done that. We love what we do. We're always going to put it out there free of charge, but it obviously helps us buy lights. No, it doesn't. I'm not using it for lights. But we really appreciate that. Thank you for everyone for that. We've got some bits and pieces that we're working on as well that we'll reveal probably in the new year. So it just helps us do more of that kind of stuff. So thank you for that. We don't really know the situation with shows next week. Obviously, matches. Sounds like Gillingham are hopeful about Boxing Day, so we keep our fingers crossed. We will be putting shows out during Christmas and New Year. We just haven't really decided when. So keep a lookout on BlueMondayITFC.co.uk. We've got the running order for the week on there, and look out on our socials. We'll be putting details out there. So we'll have some Christmas surprises for you, I'm sure, Christmas presents for you in the form of podcasts over those few weeks, but obviously it's downtime for us too, so keep an eye out that way. Guys, let's do some Twitter questions, shall we? And I have no idea how I'm going to do this equitably, so if you feel like you haven't said something for a while, put your hand up. We'll go back to the kind of school mentality of doing it. Sir, can I answer a question? So let's head back to it. I've got two questions I want to merge together. Will Airy, which player will see the biggest change in minutes played under the new manager? And Mark Beck, hello, chaps. Merry Christmas and happy and healthy new year to you all. With J-Mac handing over to K-Mac from Monday, who would you like to see rejuvenated, reintroduced or repurposed within the squad? Barry and Harper out from the cold? Fraser to play in his number eight. I'll get a name from each of you, one name if I can, a player that you think or hope will be rejuvenated or repurposed or reused, to use Mark's words, under Kieran McKenna. We'll start with Seb.
Wolfenden.
Okay. Started to play his way back into the team already. Yeah, I'll give you another one.
He's got that ability, hasn't he, whereby you can, you know, he's the one that can bring the ball out from defence and link it with the midfield. He made a couple of appearances in the cups and the EFL trophy and stuff, but he was miles away from the league kind of programme, wasn't he? And hopefully now he can get a decent run of games, because alongside Edmondson, I think he is he's way ahead of Nciala and Burgess.
Dave?
Harper, I think. Raheem Harper, so much promise there, just so much, isn't it? And just seemingly has lost his way. So you would think, you know, a new coach is coming in, could get hold of someone like that. And because he's 21, 22, and develop someone like that, I'd like to see, because the lad's got it, but loss of confidence. I think he perhaps a fit and confident Harper, I would say, could perhaps going forward offer more than Lee Evans. So yeah, I'd say Harper.
Craig?
Yeah, I was going to say the same, actually, pretty much word for word what Dave said. You know, having given him the Player of the Season award at Dartford away, I've got to continue backing my man, unfortunately. No, exactly that. And as well, being that age and, you know, the background that McKenna's got, you would hope that they would both, you know, be mutually beneficial for each other in terms of Harper be all ears and you know, he's of an age where McKenna might be able to grab him and, you know, drag him up. And exactly as Dave said, that in that position, if we go, you know, let's caveat all this, we don't know what formation, you know, McKenna's going to play. You know, we could end up playing a straight 4-4-2 and we're back to square one, but I think it's highly unlikely. So, no. But by the same token, where's Kyle Edwards going to fit into all this?
That would have been my other.
Thought, yeah. Do you think Edwards could fit in? Do you think he could be coached into a left wing back role? He's not bad defensively and he's got an engine getting up and down. Could he maybe provide what Burns does on the right if they can coach any product into it?
Oh, my goodness, man.
I mean, against the left in the division, possibly. That's an interesting shout.
If he's going to play three at the back, I guess, you know, if he goes back to 4-2-3-1.
Two-footed as well. He's excited. Not scared to use his left foot either. So yeah, wow.
More end product maybe. Speaking of someone who's got a question mark over them about whether they are going to be featured under Kieran McKenna's leadership. From Mullet, what's your lads? Does Norwood provide a conundrum for fans? Hard to deny his opportunism, but hard to love his off-field stuff. Can we expect more as a player in terms of contribution and conditioning and still be happy to see him put them away? Yours, Conflicted of the North. Anyone want to talk about Norwood and the kind of the pros and cons that you get with him and whether he's got a role to play in this team? I'll pick on Craig.
Well, you can't deny that he has got a role to play because he's scored a goal in each of the two league appearances, or one and a half league appearances that he's had in the last week or so, hasn't he? And he just, we say all the time, he just creates chaos, doesn't he, wherever he is, both on and off the pitch, arguably. And I know there was a conversation that went on and GB come in about saying a fully fit Norwood, blah, blah. That's the issue, isn't it? It's a fully fit Norwood. How long is he going to remain fully fit? And you can therefore rely on him to be playing again and again and again. Although to say that, he's played three games or been involved in three games this week, hasn't he? So let's hope that he's put those bits and pieces behind him. He can only be a benefit to us. The issue being is he's out of contract next summer, and I don't imagine a 31 going into 32-year-old James Norwood is going to be kept on. So you may well be making the most of him for the next 5 months of the season, or if someone comes in January and McKenna's got his own ideas about what he wants up top, we just don't know. While he's here, I think you make the most of him.
Dave, let me chip in this question from Dave Gore. Norwood and Bond really are horrible to play against if you're a centre-back, aren't you? Your thoughts on that partnership, yes, from yesterday?
Oh, Craig or Seb, I can't remember who said it earlier on, exactly the same. They're in, they just don't give the defenders. They're both quite mobile, aren't they? They just don't give the defenders a moment's peace. Personally, I always think if you are going to play two-man, cool, I know, I'm an old dinosaur, but I do like to see big man, slightly smaller man. So I would have, in a two, I perhaps would have Piggott, or at least give Piggott a try up there with a partner. He hasn't really, I don't think, really had that opportunity yet. So in a two, I would certainly give him a go. But yeah, going forward on the basis of yesterday, I've got really no great problem with Piggott and Bond. Because they didn't, certainly first half. And I think we said, energy levels did dip, and probably that was a bit, Norwood's general overall fitness. They just didn't let them play out from the back. They were strong. They were, use that word again, combative. But I would maybe like to see Piggott given a chance there.
Okay. We've got questions about the 3-5-2. Let me see what I can do about this. Let's start with Chris Rand. 3-5-2, so much better to have three midfielders working together on the halfway line instead of two of them shackled to the front of our penalty area. Going forward, they still have four in front of them, just like they do with 4-2-3-1. So it's win-win. Will McKenna agree, Seb?
Yes, I do. Yeah, we noticeably played further up the pitch. Obviously, Morsi got the kids call it, the pre-assist. Is that what it's called these days? Yeah. The through ball through from Bond's cross and stuff.
The kids, so I call it that. I'm not a kid.
You are, according to your photo in the pre-match show, mate.
I think it's a decent, it's great to have the three in midfield. And I guess if you want to get Fraser back in the side, then a three there is definitely the way to do that as well. But I thought Aluka did great yesterday.
And Alex Hare asked some hard choices to make in January. We've kind of already talked about this. If 3-5-2 is working better for the players we have, is it goodbye Selena?
Well, again, he's one that could play in that Aluka role, isn't he? If we're going to play a one behind, if it's going to be a 3-2-3-4-1-2 with somebody behind the front two, Selena can play that role. But then obviously you've got Chaplin. Aluka did really well yesterday. It's an embarrassment of riches for the new guy. But if he is going to play that system, that's probably the only place Selena could do it, really, unless, like Chaplin, you put him up top and he's like a buzz around the central striker.
I knew you were going to come in, Craig. I've got another question for you on the similar matter. Don't worry. And you're on strike one for that comment as well, by the way. Oliver, after all the number 10s we have assembled, did Luko make a more impressive contribution than any of them yesterday? He's the most improved player. I don't think he's improved. I think he's the most surprising player based on possibly some preconceptions we all had. That's my addition, not Olimar's. And he continues to impress equally with two in front and behind. Would this now get the most from Fraser, Craig?
Well, in terms of Aluka, we just need somebody to play that role consistently well for a number of matches, don't we? That's what we need. We just need to start having, guaranteed players playing in certain positions for a longer period of time, because, as you said, they've all had flashes of doing well in that position and flashes within games of doing well in that position. We just need someone that's nailed on, that's going to be that position. Like we said about the goalkeeper in the past, hopefully for the next couple of weeks anyway, we've got settled. But yes, Aluka did absolutely fantastic yesterday. He just needs to do it again at Gillingham on Boxing Day, doesn't he? And then needs to do it again midweek against Wickham, et cetera, et cetera. Just a quick one before going to Fraser. In terms of Selena, that would be interesting, actually, because I don't know what the agreement is in terms of the loan, you know, whether he is able to go back in January or how much of his wages we're paying towards him being here, et cetera, et cetera. It always seemed like a bit of a glamour signing, if you like. If McKenna doesn't think he's going to get much use out of him in terms of the amount we're paying for him, I wonder if he will, if he's allowed to, whether they will send him back in January. We don't know, because we're just overloaded, as we all know, in that position. In terms of Fraser, possibly. Yes, I know, Rich. Yeah, I know. I know you like him. And there's no reason to think he can't, but he hasn't shown it at all so far. Mm-hmm. I don't know. He'll be down the pecking order in terms of the next one in line, should Aluko tail off, I'd have thought.
And it'll be, obviously, we'll see what happens against Gillingham, but this system and this team kind of feels like it's their positions to lose now. That's the mentality that notionally Paul Lambert tried to impose, but you'd be very, unless there's fitness issues, you'd be hard pushed to make massive changes against Gillingham, would you? I mean, McKenna's not going to suddenly shift us to, I don't know, a totally different formation, is he? He's probably going to try and have some continuity, like Dave.
You'd think like for like. I mean, I was going to say, just going forward, which is interesting, as a result of our debacle in the week, we've got a 2-week gap, so it's going to be plenty of time to get the players out on the training pitch. So after the Lincoln game, we're not playing again till Bolton away on the 15th. So he's going to have a lot of time to work with the players, which is a good thing.
Just whistle through the last few. Was someone making a point there? I can't see.
No, just that's a really good point. That, you know, maybe we're just thinking ahead. John McGreal, lose away at Barrow, gives a new guy 2 weeks in January to get his ideas across.
He thinks genius. He's a genius.
Paul Westlake.
I like to Paul. Aluka outstanding for me. Morsey showing real grit too. Not trying to be controversial, but I like to see Piggott. There you go. Piggott and Norse, or Chapman and Norse. One needs a rest. I think we've talked about giving one maybe a rest there. What else have we got? Adam Vajani. I thought we were decent, if unspectacular today. Looks like a system for us, if I'm honest. Round pegs in round holes. His worry is the new coach might go back to that one up front. Does it feel like we've now established the case, just very quickly, yes or no's, for two up front with this team, at least with this squad? Whether McKenna's got a favourite tactical system or not, it does feel like this team lends itself very much. We've said three at the back, but two up front, yes, no's, Seth?
In this league, yeah. Definitely.
Yeah, Dave?
Yes, in the end, you know. Craig? Yeah, League One, yeah.
There we go. Yeah. Make it so, Kieran. what else have we got? Shouldn't be clicking around. FPL Tractor, my boy, said if they keep trying that hard, they'll do well, won't they? Was I right to say yes, if they do? Dave, is this a flash in the pan type performance given all of the off field stuff, or are you hopeful this is now the level?
Oh, it's a base, isn't it? It's disappointing that we didn't get the win, which we all said we probably deserve, but it's a base to work from. And you know, I think finally, seemingly, it was the best performance from a number 10, which we've all said is a bit of a critical role in the side. Aluko certainly putting the best performance of a number 10 I've seen this season. So certainly something to build on, I would hope.
But that's exactly right, isn't it? And I know it's Dave says about being a dinosaur about this sort of thing, but it is pretty simple. You just need to be up for it. If you're up for it, it just filters through the team, doesn't it? From Bond, Rotherham, through to Morsey, you know, just through to Edmondson, just need to be up for it, which they weren't at Charlton, which they certainly weren't at Barrow. Just for some reason, it just seems to be one week to the next. There's a one
Rotherham
game.
Rotherham are the best example of that. They really are. They absolutely, their intensity over 90
every
minutes
game.
Was just phenomenal.
And game on game, not just within match.
We see it yesterday again.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll talk about them in the roundup. Yeah, good shout. Final question, and I've done some research on this one, so let me give you some names instead. Mill Valley Blue, who are two League One players you think we should buy in January? Who would you let go? I think we've dealt with letting players go to an extent there. Here's some names I've got. I've got five or six names, and you can pick two from them. Jay Mateta from Fleetwood, Tom Lowry from Crewe. I'm trying to pick the teams down the bottom of the league that might, if we bid, we're more likely to get bids accepted. So Mateta, Lowry, Cole Stockton from Morecambe, if you're on a striker. Max Clark, Fleetwood, or Cohen Bramall from Lincoln, your left backs. I've got two other forward options for you. Aaron Drinnen from Leinorien and Tyree Simpson from Swindon. Anyone got any particular favourites out of or any other names that they want to chuck in that?
Mateta for me. Yeah, alongside Morsy, he'd be
super. He was brilliant.
If they could stop it being at each other's throats in training like they were during the whole match.
I don't know if anyone's followed his stats since that game, but he was outstanding that game. Certainly for an hour at least.
He might be the new Jamal Campbell-Rice, mightn't he?
But my goodness me, he was good. Tyree Simpson's an interesting one, isn't he? Because he would fit brilliantly if we're playing two up front. An absolute unit. So that is an interesting shout.
Yeah. There you go. That's the questions. Thank you so much for everyone who got involved in the questions. Appreciate those. Apologies if we didn't have time to read yours. We either talked about it already or I missed it, and apologies for that. Just going a brief roundup. Let's put the league table up, shall we? Just worth cantering for you. Some of the scores yesterday, obviously, a round of fixtures largely scuppered by the C word, and the C word isn't Christmas or that other word. We mentioned Rotherham, 1-0 win at Cambridge, just keeping up their relentless consistency. Morecambe 0, Fleetwood 0 down the bottom. Oxford 2, Wigan 3. Wigan certainly looking good at the moment, aren't they? And Oxford, we know, can kind of go on streaky runs. Another goal for Will Keane in that one. The battle of the new managers, Plymouth 1, Charlton 0. Johnny Jackson made permanent manager now at Charlton on this kind of interesting recurring auto-renewing deal, which is quite interesting. But it was always going to be the case that Johnny Jackson did really well while he was caretaker or interim manager. As soon as it becomes permanent, the kind of curse of the new manager, isn't it? So
they are us in the league as well, still.
They are 12th, yeah. I've put the league table back up there. They are just below us, aren't they? So equal on points. And finally, we've got Shrewsbury 3, Cheltenham 1, another kind of game down the bottom there. Shrewsbury doing their best to keep their heads above water in the bottom four. That is your lot. Gentlemen, thank you for packing out Blue Monday with me. Appreciate that. Appreciate your contributions, your insights as ever. This may or may not be our last flagship, certainly before Christmas. So I will allow each of you to say farewell and also pass on your Christmas wishes if in case you don't feature before Christmas, and then we'll say goodbye. Let's go Seb.
Merry Christmas, everybody. Thanks for all the views and stuff over the last 12 months, and here's to the new Paul McKenna. I've done it already. McKenna, I keep calling him Paul McKenna. Here's to the new Kieran McKenna era. Brilliant.
Look into my eyes, not around the eyes. Dave, have you got a Christmas wish for next half of the season as well?
Have I got a Christmas wish for next season? Just for the new year. Yeah, just for three or four wins on the spin, I think. Yeah, just some consistency and some winning consistency and mentality back at the club. And as following Seb, yeah, Merry Christmas to one and all. And thanks for listening and subscribing to all our wonderful followers.
Yeah, Craig.
Yeah, exactly the same. Echo the guys. Merry Christmas, everyone. Have a great time with your friends and family. And hopefully we can enjoy the football if we're allowed to over Christmas.
Christ knows what it will look like.
Exactly. Yeah. And any Seinfeld fans, it's Festivus on the 23rd of December.
Put it in your diaries, everyone. Yeah,
isn't it?
I'll echo the same sentiments from the guys. Thank you, everyone who's subscribed or followed us. We've got we've crossed a lot of milestones in the last few weeks. We've got over 4,000 followers on Twitter, if that's how you measure success. We've got over 2,000 subscribers on YouTube. Always welcome more. Give us a thumbs up. Give us a subscribe, all that kind of stuff. But great levels of engagement on our live shows. Thank you, everyone who's contributed, interacted. given a question and got involved in that, because we do this stuff for you guys. We would be chatting anyway about football. It's great that folk get involved in that. And along with the guys, I wish everyone a Merry Christmas, a safe Christmas, a relaxing one, hopefully, and hopefully some football for us to be talking about in the next few weeks. We'll be here to talk through all of it, and we'll be back in the new year as well. So look after yourselves and stay safe, and we'll see you soon.
It's the promotion running. Everyone is gathered round to watch. The McNuggets share boxes are there, offering much needed distraction. Your mate's already been booked for double dipping, but in you swoop to steal the last nugget and claim all 3 points. Oh, and there is the Harry Clark fist pump to celebrate. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in at participating restaurants.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.